ahead of you, Julie. There we go. I'll toss this over here in 1 second. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is March 25th, 2015, and we're opening up a public hearing on House Bill 5001, the Oregon Advocacy Commission Office. And we have multiple folks on the agenda, so in a minute, I'm going to pass the gavel over to our co-chair. Today's actually her day to chair, and she's going to run a really tight ship, all right? So no one take offense when she keeps you on a time limit, because we do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people plus public testimony. All right, so it's going to be a busy day today. So welcome. And Madam Co-Chair, I'm going to hand this gavel back over to you.
And thank you for getting us here. We were having a going away party for one of our wonderful interns.
There we go.
Gotten a real job.
That's always good.
That's exciting.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, before you today on the public hearing is House Bill 5001, which is the budget bill for the Oregon Advocacy Commission. The 2015-17 governor's recommended budget is just over $1 million, which represents a 245% increase from the 2013-15 legislatively approved budget. Within that request is four policy option packages, which represent an additional three positions, which would bring the position count up to a total of five and 5.0 FTE. And we have here before us up first is Lucy Baker, who's the administrator for the Oregon Advocacy Commission.
Thank you. Ms. Baker.
Good morning, or afternoon.
Morning.
Our presentation today is a group presentation that I'll make in my role as administrator.
And just a quick reminder, don't forget to introduce yourself officially for the record.
I'm sorry.
Thank you so much.
I'm Lucy Baker. I'm the administrator for the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office. And today we're doing a group presentation going through our slides. I'll be doing it with the chairs of the four advocacy commissions. And I'll take them in two batches. The chair of OCHA, the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs, will join me. He is Alberto Moreno. And also the chair on the Commission for Black Affairs, James Manning, will join me. Would you come up?
You guys have detention.
So, Madam Co-Chair, just very, very quickly, for everyone here, we're all looking at computers. We're not ignoring. What you have there, we have here. And so it allows us to take notes. So everyone, please understand the context when we're looking down at our screens.
And for those of us with old eyes, we can sometimes see it better. We can blow it up. Right. All right, you're on.
All right, thanks. And I'll be running the slide deck. Okay. As best I can here. All right.
And just a reminder for all of our witnesses, don't forget that the first time you speak, you need to just introduce yourself for the record. Thank you very much.
So, you know what? I think what I'll do, instead of not looking at you and looking at this, I'm going to look down at my paper deck. Well, no, maybe I'll look over here. Same problem. Sorry, I'm not ignoring you. Chairs and members of the committee, thank you so much for having us here today to talk about the good work of the Oregon Advocacy Commissions and a bit about our budget request. The mission of the OACO, which is my office, and I am the administrator of a two-person office, is to support the work of the commissions on Asian and Pacific Islander affairs, Black affairs, Hispanic affairs, and for women. Our goals are working together for the success of communities of color and women statewide. We do that by working at the policy level to address longstanding disparities and challenges of the communities we serve. And as a historical perspective, we go way back. Governor Hatfield established the Commission on the Status for Women in 1964, and Governor Vicatia brought the commissions into their current modern form in 1983, establishing the Commission for Women, and then also beginning the OCBA and OCHA. And then in 1995, Governor Kitzhaber began the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs, which 2 years ago became the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs. The commissions themselves, separate from our office, provide essential expertise within state government to policymakers. And just a few examples of that. This image on the slide is the three commissions on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, Hispanic Affairs, and Black Affairs, providing invited testimony before the Oregon Education Investment Board on the importance of the equity lens. After that, it was adopted by OEIB, and using an equity lens for policy discussions has become adopted now by more and more state agencies, including ODE and others. And we feel very proud that we were there at the beginning. We've also provided testimony on equity in school funding before legislative committees, including the Oregon School Funding Task Force, and now are building our chops in helping the Executive Appointments Office reach out into communities of color and women statewide to fill their ranks as they need expert members to provide them some perfect matches among communities. Communities of color and women. We also, meaning the commissions themselves, provide an essential infrastructure that our office helps support and coordinate. We leverage volunteers. All 36 preeminent community members that serve on our four commissions give their knowledge and expertise free of charge, totaling over 20,000 hours per biennium. And we have eight, I see, equally committed. Yes, they are legislators. I'm looking at one of them, Representative Betty Comp, that serves on the Commission for Women, and others who are appointed by the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, and then confirmed at Senate hearings.
Nothing.
Yes, it's an important board.
Oh, it is important. No. I serve on one of the, not these, but anyway, keep going.
It's an experience.
Yeah.
And over the past few years, and we'll talk about this in just a moment, the growth in communities of color has changed in Oregon. Oregon has changed. We all feel it, no matter where we live. The Oregon has now grown to 12% Hispanic citizens, 4% Asian, 2% Black, and then there are others as well, of course, American Indians and other groups. And right now, for our current budget, where we cost 16 cents per represented person, which is, of course, 8 cents a year. And the goals then for the commissions have focus in four areas: advocacy in their six strategic areas, which include education, health, jobs and economy, safety and policing, stable families, and something good. Oh, civic engagement. Broadening the scope of research and partnerships that the commissions perform with state partners and the data sets that the partners own. Developing partnerships, both in the community and in state government, to work collaboratively on the work we do. Growing leadership within our constituent communities, now speaking with the voice of the commissions, not my office, but the commissions do this, and integrating community engagement using All of the strategies and tools at our disposal, which lately has included Facebook. We have had a funded position in our office that is a work-study student from PSU, funded this current biennium by this group, who has grown the number of Facebook followings among all of our constituent communities by several 100%. So we're doing very well in that area. Before I go on, then, I would like to turn over this part of the discussion to Alberto Moreno, chair of OCHA, to say a bit more.
Thank you, Lucy. Chairs, esteemed committee members, my name is Alberto Moreno. I have the pleasure of serving as the chair for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and I'm pleased to be here with you today. As Lucy suggested, U.S. Census data reveals that Oregon is becoming a more culturally and linguistically diverse state. In fact, Oregon's population has seen significant growth in communities of color and other diverse and underrepresented communities, including a 63% growth in the Latino population, a 41% growth in the Asian community, a 22% growth in the state's Black population, and last but certainly not least, a 6% growth in the Native American community. This dramatic growth has helped to make Oregon a more linguistically and culturally diverse place to live. But while these highly productive communities make clear and meaningful contributions to the state economy, communities of color and women face significant disparities when it comes to sharing equally in Oregon's economic opportunities. We do not always enjoy equal participation in key decision-making bodies and face marked health disparities, marked income inequality, especially when we speak about women, and unequal access to employment opportunities, to name just a few. In spite of these exclusions, our communities make significant contributions to the great state of Oregon. As chair for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, I would be remiss if I did not share with you that the 500,000 Latinos who now call Oregon home have a combined purchasing power of over $8 billion in Oregon alone. Incidentally, and not irrelevant to our conversation today, over 60,000 Latinos become eligible to vote across this great country of ours each and every month. We also have the highest rate of new business startups in Oregon and pay millions into state coffers each and every year, as you well know. There is clearly no denying the contributions of our respective communities, the contributions that they make to our great state, and the important role that this workforce will play in the state's political and economic futures. In fact, we might argue that in order for Oregon to remain economically competitive, that we need all of our communities and their various gifts. But while many of our communities have doubled in size, the budget for the advocacy commissions have actually been greatly reduced. In fact, our budgets have seen an inverse reduction in relationship to the growth in financial contributions of the communities that we've just talked about. The growth in our communities create, we believe, a political imperative to ensure that our communities have equitable access to services, educational opportunities, and that we are adequately represented in policy. And that expressly, in the role and value of our various commissions, we work daily to eliminate many of these barriers. That is the expressed and single role of these commissions. It's an example of some of our work, I want to call your attention to the work that the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs is doing in partnership with others, which includes ensuring workplace and civil protections for our communities. And since I assume the role as chair, we have executed the first ever, this is significant for us, we executed the first ever statewide Latino survey. This is significant because we have always based our policy decisions predicated on the notion that I would understand what the community needs, that I would know what our community needs. But we thought we would take a novel approach. We thought we would ask the community directly. And I want to pause here from my scripted presentation to tell you what we found out. We ask the community, what are your top priorities as you live out your lives, as you pray, as you work, and across our great state? Unequivocally and without exception, our community told us, we're not concerned with getting welfare. We're not concerned with getting free handouts. We're not even concerned with healthcare. Our top priority is having access to jobs. You provide us with equal access to jobs, and we will take care of the rest. I say this to you because it is a divergent narrative from the narrative that you hear every day about our communities. And I want to call out what that narrative sounds like to me. It is not a narrative of dependence. It is a narrative of independence, and maybe even a narrative of intradependence, because that's who we are as communities. So I wanted to pause to break from my scripted comments to you to share that with you. We're proud of it. And we hope that as a state, we follow suit in asking directly our communities what is most important to them, what is dearest to them.
Moreno, may I just say, that is not a break. That is exactly the kind of information this committee needs to hear about discrete actions that your commissions are taking to actually understand what the needs are of the communities that you represent. So I don't consider that a break. I consider that critical testimony. Thank you for bringing that to us.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for your presence today, for your willingness to learn with us as we walk through this process. But we are clearly not done. We are working in partnership to ensure workplace and civil protections to our communities. And we are also working with the Department of Justice to move forward legislation to protect our community from notario fraud. Many of you know that President Obama has issued a number of executive orders. One is called DACA, which affects our youth, and then the other is DAPA. What this means is that our community is growing in its hope, that we become hopeful that finally a remedy may be available to us by which we might adjust our status. And that means that we will be seeking legal counsel and advice. Unfortunately, in our community, what happens is we have notary publics who assume this role inappropriately, and we're moving forward legislation to make sure these notary publics do not take advantage of our communities by taking their money and misrepresenting them in a legal process where they have no standing, where they have no expertise, and certainly no licensure to do so. So we're moving forward with your help to ensure that they are protected from that kind of fraud.
Madam Chair.
Sorry, Representative Nicholson.
May I interrupt with a follow-up question?
Please.
Thank you. You indicated something might be happening with legislative help. Could you be more specific? Is there statutory language that's being worked on? Is there a bill? I'm disturbed to hear this. What can we do to help?
Thank you. So please know that there is a group of us working to put together language. We've asked one of our champions, could we use one of her priority bills to introduce this important language so that we could ensure those protections. So indeed, language is being crafted. We are putting the finishing touches on it to make sure that it takes care of this need and doesn't create any unintended consequences. And so I'm happy to have a conversation with you offline to provide further details.
Thank you.
Let us know if we can be of other assistance, Mr. Moreno, because this committee certainly cares about that issue.
Thank you. And with your permission, we will reach back and ask for your support. We want to make sure that this important remedy has the smoothest sailing possible. We're also working with the Oregon Latino Health Coalition to ensure health care access to over 17,000 children who are presently excluded from the state's Medicaid program. We believe that we live in the kind of state, we live in the kind of Oregon that wants to take care of all of its children. And so we're working in partnership with this great organization to make that happen. In conclusion, given the dramatic and meaningful growth in our communities and the robust leadership capital evident within these families, we ask for your help in adequately resourcing our work to ensure that all of our communities are equitably represented. We believe firmly that the promise of this great state lies not only with its capacity for innovation, but that its greatest potential resides with its people in all of our rich and beautiful diversity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Moreno.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Moreno, you want to hang tight?
Yes, thank you.
Certainly.
I want to share with you my thanks and my appreciation. I think that there are some people here at this committee that know of my journey and different hardships that I've lived in during my life, but in the early 80s, I owe 17 Latino men the thanks for helping me keep a job, feed my children, and help me save to go to college. Mm. If it wasn't for those 17 men that worked on a farm with me and took care of me, they took care of me when I didn't have money for groceries. They always fed me. And when I was tired and cranky, they would always be there to say, can we help you? And I really love our Latino community in our Woodburn area. And anything that we can do, I mean, just let Lucy know and we'll just do it.
Representative Comp, I'm so pleased to hear your acknowledgement of those gifts. This is that kind of narrative that you heard me reference earlier, this narrative of interdependence, of kind and beautiful interdependence. And that is the kind of state that we wish to live in, that we wish to make our home. So thank you for that, and thank you for your journey.
Yeah, well, and Madam Chair, there's absolutely no way that I could repay them for all their thoughtfulness and caring that they gave me. So
thank you. We are all here because we are all indebted in some way, shape, or form. Thank you. I want to yield my time to my esteemed colleague.
And first, it's me again. James, you're soon. I'll walk us through a few more of our presentation slides. Oh, I covered up my computer. Okay. Oh. Oops, page down. So we've mentioned, and you have access to just our quickest overview. Our four statutory areas, as we've been talking about, are advocacy, leadership, partnership, and internship, which is actually how it is we approach our public policy research. And we want to talk about that a bit as well as part of our advocacy and research. I don't think I need to reiterate that. In our advocacy, the bills that the Oregon Advocacy Commissions follow are the tenderloin of the equity stripe of legislation running through any given session. And we've grown the number of bills that we've been able to support in my office and the commissioners in response to the commissioners' desires. And in the 2013 session, the commissioners testified on 20 individual bills. And you can see the breakdown of these along with the 10 additional bills that they testified on in 2014. You can see the actual testimony online at our website, of course. But 33% of this biennium's support has been for justice, safety, and policing. 33% for education, 7% for jobs, and 27% for health.
Senator Johnson.
Just a curiosity, and this is something I've explored in previous sessions, but that is, as an executive branch agency. How you reconcile your advocacy in the building with executive branch directives. Most state agencies have very strict prohibitions about what they are allowed to advocate for, including their own bills. And so I'm trying to figure out, how have you threaded the needle to have commissioners here on commission volition? Where's that balancing point that the executive branch gives you the okie-dokie to, that's a technical term, to come down and advocate on legislation when other agencies are not afforded that same accommodation?
Well, I've heard two questions, Senator. One is how it is that I do that, keeping my executive branch. I am the hired help. You have to understand that. I am the hired help. And how to keep my executive branch duties strictly on the executive branch side. The commissioners are specially invited individuals into state government having to do with advocacy. So they have a role to advocate statutorily, and I have a role to administer by executive branch. So the way I do it is, and anyone who knows us well, I think Representative Comp, you'd be able to say if this what I'm about to say is true. But Senator, the way I do it is that anyone who thinks that I'm the show is quickly disabused of this. I am the hired help, and you must speak to the commissions. The commissions vote on all of the stuff that they want to support. All I do is provide them with the areas of, the searches that they need to think. And then once they've thought, we implement. So that's my brief answer to it. And for those that wonder how to do this, I'd be glad to talk more about it, perhaps offline. And then also each biennium, we go to talk to Dimitri Pommatier, by which I mean the chairs do, and I listen, so that Dimitri can hear and Kendall can hear what it is that the commissioners are supporting, and then they're informed. I don't believe the commissions have ever taken a negative position. They look for things that they can support, and they go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is good?
Is good.
Okay.
Keep going.
So we've supported, we track here in my office, more than 100 bills of interest in 2013 and more than 60 in 2014. This session, we are tracking about 70. We've worked with the commissions to focus specifically on their equity stripe. We help them prepare testimony. We help them submit it. I don't help them deliver it. That was meant to be submit. We also staff them as they wish to write legislation. And that was true in 2013 when they worked on a hate crimes bill. OCBA took that on. In 2014, I think, when the OCFW took on domestic violence survivors being able to change their names with anonymity. And now this session, there are two bills that Representative Betty Comp and Senator Manus Anderson have worked, the LCs worked with the Commission for Women regarding. To see more of our advocacy,
Ms. Baker, Senator, what's it?
Oh, yeah. Hi. I think I'm going to look over here for my slide deck and be able to see you. Yes.
You were talking about bill tracking. I see that in your budget and the state government service charges, the cost of bill tracking in Linus has gone from $10 to $3,500. I would wonder, all that information is available on OLIS to anybody who pulls it up. So I would wonder, why are you paying DAS to do that?
Actually, I don't know the answer to that question. DAS has some sort of license which they can tell you more about regarding Linus, but it's, Senator, that's been changed now. I've been learning new bill tracking software. It's called Bill Tracker, and it allows me to make the types of reports. I can't make reports off of OLIS for the commissions. So Bill Tracker, they've got some special license with it, and I've been using that. I was prepared to hate it. I love it, and I don't know how much I pay for it.
Okay. You could just get back to us with that information.
I will
just
do
send
it.
Send that to Ms. McClintock. And yeah. We'll,
that is a Linus.
Yeah.
According to this, yeah, same thing. So.
Wait, Bill Tracker is the same as.
On the line here, it says Chief Information Office Strategic Technology. No, I'm on the wrong line here. Chief Operation Officer Bill Tracker, and then in parentheses Linus, it was last time it was just Linus, I believe. Yeah. So that's they've gone from $10 to $3,500.
We'll keep an eye on that. I do think that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's a lot of money, but in some other ways it's not so much, and I think all of our staff tend to use Bill Tracker too. So, Senator Johnson?
Why can't you report to your commission off OLIS?
We do specialized reports for the commissions, so each commission gets its own legislative tracking report by which we can then mark priority bills and other pieces. There are parts of it that I just haven't yet been able to do from OLIS, and Bill Tracker is now DAS's bill tracking stuff, so I use it.
Maybe when you submit more information to us, Ms. Baker, you can submit a copy of a sample of one of the reports that you can generate.
Oh, yeah.
And what you could get off of OLIS compared to what you can get with Bill Tracker, and that might give the committee some sense of the added functionality that you're perceiving and your commission members are perceiving that make it worth the budget.
Thank you. I'd be delighted to do that.
Thank you. That would be helpful.
And
thank you.
Nancy, I know you're behind me. You got that information, I think. Okay.
Yeah, and our LFO staff are really good about circling with our agency people to make sure that all the things, the loops get closed at the end. So.
Great. Thank you, everybody. Okay, yes, okay. I will do that.
Let's keep going.
Okay. In the area of public policy research, one of the statutory works of the commission is to study issues that are affecting their communities. And Representative Lou Frederick, who serves on OCBA, has been a champion and a mentor on several of the special efforts that are going forward, and had noted that anecdotal information gets his attention for certain, but that for policymakers there's a need for the details to back up the stories. Soon you'll hear from Chair Manning regarding some of the work that they're doing, and see why Representative Frederick and OCBA are excited about that. Our statutory missions, we provide essential, within research, we provide essential data regarding longstanding disparities that have needed light of day. We provide practice review and analysis and recommendations for policy, and you can see the breakdown of that by our subject areas. Also, electronically, and Krista has on paper a broadside about the public policy research that we're doing right now. We have generally 6 to 8 individual public policy research efforts that are going forward, championed by a commission and a key state partner. Our partners have been growing over this biennium. Last time I saw you, we had 2. We've now got 7, and they include the Governor's Office, ODE, OEIB, DOJ, the U.S. Attorney's Office, BOLI, and our newest, the State Library Reference Division, and waiting in the wings, the Criminal Justice Commission. One of your reports, I thought you might like to just see one of these. It's not studying for the sake of studying, but to reflect true but hidden barriers. And this is one chart that I've pulled out of OCBA and BOLI's Apprenticeship to Journeyman disparity report for people of color in the trades. And it shows some huge disparities that will be, I know that the Boley Commissioner will be working on to develop policies regarding over the next 2 years.
Can you go back to that slide?
Yes.
I just want to point
Whoa.
Other direction.
Not that slide.
Page up.
Okay. There you go. One more. Maybe not. Anyway.
Crap. Oh, I mean, excuse me. 16. Here. Yes.
There we go. Okay, good. I just want to point out that this circles back very nicely to the survey results that Mr. Moreno told us about. Here are young people who want to be gainfully employed, who have sought out the opportunity of apprenticeship in the trades, which we all know have the opportunity to provide living wage jobs for young Oregonians, and where that's an important way to reach our 40-40-20 goals and ensure that we actually have a high rate of employment, and in particular among communities that are traditionally disadvantaged, and yet we're finding these high rates of terminations. When those are anecdotally reported, people say, oh, well, there must have been a reason. But when you see systematic patterns like this that are demonstrated with this kind of research, that's a different story, and that allows the commissions to make recommendations about policy, this legislature to engage, the trades themselves to engage, and to create community conversations about how do we get people who want to work, which is the vast majority of people, actually working in gainful employment. And so this is, I think, a very useful example for us, Ms. Baker, and I'm grateful to you for bringing it, especially in confluence with the data Mr. Moreno reported. So thank you.
This and at this point, I want to introduce Mr. James Manning, who is the chair of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs. He hails from Corvallis and is joining us here today.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair. Excuse me, co-chairs. I got a little bit of a frog in my throat. Senators.
Would you like some water, Mr. Manning?
Can I please?
I'll get it for you.
And representatives, it's very nice to be here again, and I want to convey my thanks and gratitude for you allowing me to sit here at the table and present just a little bit about what OCBA has done and will look forward to do in order to assist you as our lawmakers to make sure that our community is what we entail it to be, and that's one that's full of equity and inclusion for everyone.
And so, say your name for the record also.
Oh, yes, if you would, please, Mr. Manning. Thank you.
I clear my throat. Thank you. My name is James Manning, and just to kind of correct the records, I'm from Eugene. But that's okay. We're pretty close to Corvallis, so I can see how that can be. So, but I do appreciate that. Thank you, Lucy. Lucy and our staff of two have been doing a tremendous job in supporting the four advocacy commissions. They've gone above and beyond my wildest imagination. As a matter of fact, I didn't think that anyone actually worked that hard outside of being in the military. But I found that not true because of the dedication that they bring. And it is definitely needed because the activities that the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs has created or has spun out to has been very increasing. We've done a number of partnerships with DOJ, ODE, the Oregon Investment Board, and Urban League of Portland, and a host of other organizations to kind of find out and receive input from community, African-American, Black community, and not only that, from all of the communities, because we're all doing life together. That's a little coin of phrase I like to use. We're not going to get out of this, but we can all live in this together. So some of the things that the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs has been doing is doing a lot of partnership with Willamette University. We have our commission, chair commission of the Legislative Committee, which is Robin Morris Collins. She's a professor at Willamette University, and she uses some of her students as a resource to do a number of research projects for us in the areas of some is disproportionate disproportionate treatment and schools and stuff, how students of color seem to be, as the data lead, to be disproportionately punished versus non-students of color for similar or same offenses. And that information, we've already provided that information up to certain members of legislation. One of the things that we are really focused on is how can we assist our legislators in making things better? Because I think that as part of our charter, it is important for us to not only find out from the people that we represent, but also convey that information to you as the lawmakers so that you can see what the communities are thinking about, the ones that are in, sort of invisible. We talk about the journeyman. We talk about the apprentice and journeyman graduation disparities and stuff with the chart indicated up there. These are some of the things that we want to kind of to shine a light on as we bring it to your attention so that sometimes we don't, if we don't feel it, then we don't think that it actually exists. But it does exist, and it makes us all accountable to make the make sure that we are creating a state where it's something that we all can be proud of. And we are very proud of Oregon. Oregon has been leading the nation in a number of things that we've done that's been positive. And I want to commend you first before I go any further to say I want to thank you all individually for everything that you have been doing for all of our communities. You have really made me proud when I go back east to Washington, D.C. I boast about our legislators, how they're open, how they are seeking to make Oregon the state that everybody should replicate. And we use our advocacy commissions in order to help support you in your efforts. I think that's very important. So a lot of the things that I wanted to talk about, Chair Moreno had already spoken up, so I'm not going to duplicate that. And then the slides that Lucy had brought up, she's kind of stole a lot of my thunder as well. So I'm kind of at a point now where I can only say that the positions that we have petitioned or that we're looking for are very essential and critical to the continuous work that all of the advocacy commissions are doing. We do not just meet just to hold a meeting or anything like that. They are very meaningful, and we cross over into all of the departments here in the states to include Department of Justice. We're also working or a part of Senator Shields' efforts for children of incarcerated parents. How does that look as far as communities of color and the representation? How does that look? How do we address that? We're looking at Boley for some of the initiatives that they're doing with regards to apprenticeship programs and how we can improve upon those numbers. So there are a host of things that we're trying to do, but we find that our staffing is pretty limited. So we ask that you really support us in this. We can only do so much, and with a two-person staff, it's very limited. And we definitely try to make sure that we structure everything, streamline it as much as possible. But then you can streamline to the point where it's ineffective.
Thank you very much, Mr. Manning. I'm going to do a really quick time check and recognize that Representative Frederick has joined us. I think what I'm going to do is, if I may, Ms. Baker, invite Representative Frederick to testify next to get him back to his other duties, and then remind people that we have about 45 minutes left. So I know you don't have boatloads of slides left, and we want to make sure that everybody, both your commission chairs and members of the public who want to testify, have the opportunity. So I just want to make sure we're keeping an eye on the time. Representative Frederick, how nice to have you join
Thank
us.
Thank you very much. And I'm James, I'm Lou, first of all, I'm Lou Frederick, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. And I'm also the legislative liaison to the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs. And I think James Manning has decided to take my comments. So this is a common thing. Nice going, Lucy.
Everybody's singing the same sheet of music, so that's a good thing.
Well, actually, what I wanted to say, frankly, is that I am impressed with how much the advocacy commissions have matured in the past few years. These commissions don't just complain, and they don't just take on pet issues. They're working to become a deep well of information and a resource for us, for the Oregon decision makers, and I'm very pleased to be part of that. In order to do that, though, they need research, administrative, and coordination capacity. The current staff of two has been able to leverage their work by coordinating work of partners and volunteers, and the work that has been produced is really rather impressive. I'm particularly glad, and you're going to hear more about this in the next few weeks, I hope, to have the research compiled in the Apprentice to Journeyman Advancement Report. this is going to be something that you're going to be wanting to know about. This is the sort of high-quality research that we need to either confirm or refute what we hear via anecdotes. I look forward to firming up that capacity with the modest increase in the resources proposed. And as you know, volunteers can do a lot, but the more work is being done by volunteers, the more coordination is needed to make that work coherent and useful. I want to call your attention to the letter that was submitted by the legislative liaisons to the advocacy commissions. I don't know if you've seen that or not. It makes this case really more completely. I just want to say as well, we have really seen an incredible strength of these particular commissions over the last, certainly the African-American, the Commission on Black Affairs over the last few years, and that has come with some really important documents, important ideas, bills that have been introduced this year and over the last couple of years, but certainly this year because of the Advocacy Commission. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. And honestly, you stole a little bit of my words.
Oh, great. it's a pattern.
But we like that because I, too, was at some point today going to say what a refreshing change the hearings are this year compared to 2 years ago when we had some challenges. And right. I commend Ms. Baker and Ms. Stone and all the chairs for the work that you've done to really advance the cause, and all of our legislative liaisons to the commissions for the strong work that you've offered. It's really great to see the progress that has been made. Last year was sort of a, 2 years ago was sort of a picking up the pieces time, and now it's sort of look what's happened in a matter of 2 short years, and that's great to see. Questions for Representative Frederick? No. Thank you so much, Representative, for taking the time to Representative Taylor.
Thank you, thank you, Chair Senator Haber. Perhaps someone, I had to step out for a second, so I apologize. But so did we get an explanation as to why there's been this rapid decline of African-American carpenters? Did we get an answer to that?
You know, I don't know whether you've given an answer, but I will tell you that I've been talking with folks.
Oh.
I've been talking with a number of the groups there just to determine what's going on there.
The rapid decline.
The carpenters are upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that this is not something that they are just taking as a given. But I think we're going to see the differences regarding, for instance, what happens with the electricians union and how they handle things like the practicum. If you are immediately given a place you're supposed to go for your practicum, you're not going to be discouraged by it necessarily as you might be if you're having to work out your own practicum. That's one of the things. So they're trying to figure out just what it is in their particular program that is creating a problem, because they're introducing a lot of folks, but they aren't getting people out of that system. And this is the kind of good information I think we're starting to get that we can use.
Thank you. Senator Whitsitt?
Thank you. I would draw your attention that the graph is actually goes through 2008, which is 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I wonder, do we have some more current data?
There is some. And
can you get close enough to the microphones, Ms. Baker? Thank you so much.
Yes, there is some more current data, and Senator, you can find it in the addendum that is part of the ancillary materials for our presentation today. I pulled out a chart that I thought would help people understand some of the interesting things that are being found, but you can find more, and I'd love to get it to your office if that would be helpful.
Please do.
There's
Thank
a
you.
Full report in OLIS called the, it's one of the meeting materials called the OACO Minority Apprentice Report. This commission has provided a lot of supplementary material that's all available to there as well for people who are interested. And that's the one you're referring to, Ms. Baker?
It is. And then there's another report as well, and I'll get them both to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. If you could get any materials that have been requested, if you'd get them to Ms. McClintock, and she'll get them to the entire committee. That way you don't have to send it to 12 people at once.
Nicer. Yes. Thank you.
Nine of us. Anyway. Okay. Other questions for Representative Frederick? Representative, thank you again
thank
for taking the time
much.
To come and talk with us.
Thanks for considering this. I appreciate it. Great.
Thank you. Ms. Baker.
Yes, I'd like to invite Chair Stephen Ying of the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs and Chair Stephanie Vardavis of the Commission for Women to join me.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs and member of the committee. My name is Stephen Ying. I'm the chair of the OCAP here. Last year, we were invited by the White House Initiative to the National Conference in Washington, D.C. Through the conference, the White House Initiative, we built a national partnership to help API community. We also established regional relations with Washington, Idaho, and Alaska. And this year, we're scheduling two national forums on AAPI issues to be held in Portland and Oregon, Portland and Eugene this summer. We have an E3 ambassador that is not every state has it. That is helping us to link the WIAPI, a White House initiative on AAPI. Resources to attract new resources for the student financial assistance in Oregon with the national program called ANAPIPS. I'm not trying to pronounce that. It's too long.
Hey, Stephen. Nancy provided me with what that means. It is a federal program for student assistance, and it's called the Asian American, Native American, Pacific Islander Serving Institutions. So it would go to Oregon State Schools. ANAPISI.
Okay. ANAPISI. Okay. That's the white word.
Learn something new every day.
So we are helping our young people engage with civil service through ERCO and APANO Civil Leadership Training. We also participate with annual Asian America Youth Leadership Conference, which is 1 day conference involving nearly 500 high school students from across Oregon. Through our partnership with APANO, we are also supporting the New Voters Initiative to register API citizen to register to vote. Our research effort with OEIB and the OCHA on education disparity included preparing issue brief on ELL and disproportionately the discipline and chronic absenteeism. OCAPIA committee work with the education and civil engagement. We need really need staff to help us support this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from Mr. Ying? Senator Johnson.
In addition to the paid staff, we've already heard about using volunteers. Has there been any effort across all of the advocacy commissions to look for student interns at either graduate level or to do research, to do targeted projects?
Yes, we do. Nancy, Lucy can answer that. I think because we do have a staff part-time.
Sure. We've over the past biennium, we've had about 15 individual master's, PhD, and law students that have been working with us as research interns. And they're unpaid, but they're paying for their credits. And we offer a very high-quality public policy-related experience with mentoring by real legislators that they can't get elsewhere. And their schools are now reaching out to us to ask if we have internships available for their students. So the public health school at OUS has just reached out asking if they could have some, please. So they will, but not today. We're full up.
Ms. Baker, that begs a question, actually. Speaking as somebody who has an office with two full-time staff and three close to full-time interns this year myself, it takes a certain amount of staff time to provide a good experience for interns. Do you have an estimate as to how much time per intern you and Ms. Stone have to invest to create these quality internship experiences?
Yeah, sure. We leverage a lot of other co-interest among our state partners. And for every law student that we have working for us, they must have a member of the Oregon State Bar supervising them. So over at Boley, we have a full-time supervisor for their law students. At Willamette, we have those. So I'm always inveigling our way into other people's work plans and their staffing in order to make this work. It's really not a partnership. It's a partner shop. Once you come to us, we are in your shop and working with your staff to help it. What do? I coordinate making partner shops, and my work then is, and Nancy's, is recruiting the students, reaching out to the shops that we're working with the commissions to get the ideas over to the shops and crafting all of that. So how much does it take my time? For every internship we've got, which is currently, I think I have six operating, it takes about a day of mine a week to make certain that all of the plates are still spinning on sticks. But by doing that, the shops that we work with have been coming back for more and more. ODE is now on their third. OEIB has got their fourth. And Boley is working on its second. So we do well at a day a week.
Senator Johnson?
I'm having a hard time reconciling something that you just said, that Boley has a full-time supervisor for two interns?
They have, I'll say her name in just a minute. It's Marsha Odemiller, who is full-time their legislative, no, their legal person. And she takes on our interns, and then she also takes on Boley's other interns, and then she handles their entire legal shop for them. So she's full-time, but not full-time for us.
I guess what I'm trying to reconcile is Boley is in the legislature complaining that they don't have enough people to do their core mission, and you're saying that they have a full-time supervisor to do interns. I'm just trying to reconcile all these various and sundry requests and what constitutes the core mission of the agency. I'd rather have the transparency. I'm not quibbling over giving more people, but I dislike the notion that we reassign folks inside agencies to do other than the core mission and then come back to the legislature and ask for more people to do the core mission.
Well, the disparity work that we're working on with them is part of their core mission, but why don't I get more information for you from Boley itself? I don't really know its inner workings. So if that would be helpful, I can do that.
Thank you.
But just to clarify, I want to make sure I understood what you said, and I appreciate Senator Johnson's point. The woman you referenced, she supervises all the interns, both those affiliated with OACO and the ones who do other kinds of work for them, and she runs their entire in-house legal team?
That's my understanding of her work.
So that is part of their key, their core mission, if I understand, and they're doing work related to it, or am I missing something?
I don't know. It begs another question. I thought agencies relied on DOJ for their legal advice. Just now that Boley had its own legal department?
I don't know the answer to that question. I do know that, I don't know, is the net answer. We'll get more information.
I don't know. Okay.
We'll get more information.
Is good? All
yes.
Right.
Yes. Thank you. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you very much. Different line of questioning. I wonder if you have a similar graph to that updated for the folks who are with Mr. Ying and the Commission on Asian and Pacific Islanders. I mean, for that group of that cohort, do you have a similar graph to that?
We do, but it's in the area of education. Granular data collection for APIs within education is OCAPIA's key interest. There are 50 individual Asian groups in Oregon, and the education successes of some tend to cover up the huge struggles of other groups in education. So I do have other charts and graphs that pertain to APIs, but it's in the area of education.
Okay. And the follow-up, please.
Sure.
It has to do with your next slide, but on your issue briefs.
What is my next slide?
We have a letter here from the Chief Education Officer complimenting your agency for the issue briefs. I was wondering, on the disproportionate discipline, chronic absenteeism, and support for English language learners, have we do we have comparisons there also for Mr. Yang's cohort?
They are included in it, and I'm not certain how much. I'll bet it's tracked too, Senator. So why don't I find out more about what ODE has to offer in that area if it's of special interest, and I can get it to you.
I think it would be a very interesting comparison. Thank you.
Terrific. I'd be glad to do that.
But I do think, Ms. Baker, that more granular would be helpful in this regard because of your point that's very well taken, that while we have one commission for all of Asian and Pacific Islanders, there are a lot of subgroups there that may be functioning at different levels and relating to school in very different ways.
Oh, absolutely. And that's been broken out by Asian groups,
great.
So I can provide that.
Thank
I'd
you
be
very
glad
much.
To. Chair Yang, thank you.
All right. Can I just ask, Ms. Jensen, how many people do we have signed up for public testimony? Do you know? I want to make sure that we have enough time for folks. Seven? Okay. So, Ms. Baker, how much more time do you think you need for your presentation? Because I want to make sure that people have time for public testimony.
Right. What I thought I would do is just make certain that if there go through the deck quickly to make certain that any slides that we must show are shown.
Okay.
And do that quickly and then hand that over to Chair Stephanie Vardavis to finish us up.
That would be great. Thanks. Because I'd like you to be done, if you could, by no later than about quarter after, so we have time for at least 2 or 3 minutes per person.
Sounds good.
Public testimony. I wish we could do more, but we want to make sure we get all the content in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
And I'm going to watch this screen so I can see this side of the room. Please forgive the back of my head earlier. So we do have a growing backlog of research projects. We've talked about that for a bit. And Lou has already testified. Leadership development is another area that the commissions work to improve for their cohort. And the OCFW's Women of Achievement Awards are a longstanding effort to raise the achievements of women throughout statewide in all of our areas of attainment and through all of our communities and provide them with recognition. And then OCBA recently, maybe 2 years ago, I was here with ODE. They were talking about the Oregon History Project. The Oregon History Project existed at that time to infuse curricula with better information on communities of color. And over this past biennium, the commission, all of our cultural commissions have worked with them on that. OCBA has grown that into outreach for the Roosevelt High School Rough Riders. The Oregon High School Rough Riders are a group of diverse students who interview leaders of color statewide and then make that information available to history projects. So this is the first year OCBA will be sponsoring that and mentoring it. Other areas that we do, I've mentioned diverse candidate development and co-sponsoring leadership development training. Each of the commissions has been involved in that, in sponsoring with their community partners, their wonderful community partners, on training, leadership training. And our community partners include APANO, Urban League of Portland, Center for Intercultural Organizing, the Latino Health Coalition, the Oregon Latino Agenda for Action, the League of Women Voters, and the American Association of University Women. And many of them are here to testify today. The commission state partners I've spoken about, I won't reiterate that. This is from the Attorney General on a research internship that we did with them through OCBA and their crowd doing hate crime. This is our organizational chart as it currently exists. There's me down there, the administrator, the executive support specialist, and all of our wonderful commissions. This is the org chart that we're asking your help with. It comes out of a question that this group asked the commissions 2 years ago, and that is, what resources do you need to more fully realize your vision? So over the past year, the commissions have worked with the governor's office and DAS-HR, talked amongst themselves, and put together and reviewed what it is they do and where the gaps are, and have put together this staffing plan. An executive support specialist reclassification for Nancy Kramer, who is our existing person, my other person. The policy and operations analyst, an office specialist, and a public affairs specialist. Policy to help double the number of our policy research pieces that we do. The office specialist to help us staff 100 additional meetings that are represented by the emerging committee structure of the commissions. And a public affairs specialist to help truly reach out into communities statewide to engage communities of color and women in policy discussions. I'm going to, excuse me, one required slide. Our key performance measures, we've improved, actually. We now have 97% satisfaction rating across timeliness, relevance, and several other measures. We're doing well in all of them, except timeliness. Timeliness, we're still dragging along at 87% satisfaction around our timeliness. So it's just a staffing bandwidth issue, but we're improving. And of the 15 best practice indicators for financial management and commissioner training and other pieces, we've achieved 100% rating across the four commissions. I'm going to turn this over to Chair Stephanie Vardavis of the Oregon Commission for Women to bring us home.
And I owe Ms. Kramer an apology. I completely mixed up your name with another friend of mine who looks a lot like you. So I apologize, Ms. Kramer.
I was wondering if Nancy was holding out on us.
No, I have a friend named Nancy Stone who looks an awful lot like Ms. Kramer, and so I just got completely confused. It's entirely my fault. I apologize.
So, good afternoon. My name is Stephanie Vardavis, and I'm the chair of the Oregon Commission for Women. Everyone who has spoken before me has stolen a huge amount of what I was going to say. And so, as a result, I have the privilege of, I think, and maybe even the blessing of being relatively brief, which is in everyone's interest. I'm just going to observe that the Oregon Commission for Women is in a unique position vis-a-vis the other advocacy commissions. We represent roughly 51% of all of their communities. And so we have the opportunity to collaborate with all of them in a really interesting way. And when you look at the list of bills, for example, that the various advocacy commissions have supported, the Women's Commission comes in with more than two-thirds of them as a co-sponsor, well, not a co-sponsor, but as an advocate or a co-advocate with the other advocacy commissions, just because our interests do overlap with theirs quite a lot. We spend a lot of time working on women's leadership development, as Lucy indicated. We collaborate with other women's organizations. In the past, we have collaborated primarily with the League of Women Voters and the American Association of University Women. In the last year or so, we've branched out in a really interesting way. We are part of, and we're a co-convener of, a new organization called the Oregon Women's Equality Coalition, which is still in formation, but it's already made up of a patchwork of seven or eight or potentially more women's organizations and family advocates throughout Oregon. And we are collaborating with them to raise money privately to retain the Population Research Center at the university, at Portland State University, to do the deepest research dive that has been done probably in 20 years or more into the actual nuts and bolts statistics of how Oregon women are doing economically, socially, within their families, and everything else. We expect the report. The report is due in the next 8 to 9 months. And what we are hoping and what we expect, frankly, and this is part of our collaboration with the Oregon State Library Research Division, we're hoping that what comes out of that is really a blueprint for public policy advocacy that will take us in directions we haven't had the data to go in the past, but which we think has the potential to be very, very fruitful. It's just that until you have the data, it's hard to know what you need to do. So in closing, just to talk about the budget requests and the staffing requests that we've made, this breaks down into really two categories. There's the logistical and there's the substantive. So my other chairs, fellow chairs, have spent some time talking about just the logistics of the fact that we have four commissions, we have all of this public policy research that needs to get done. We have organizations begging to place interns with us, and we don't have the wherewithal at this moment even to supervise these interns, who would cost nothing to do the research work that will help not only the commissions but all these state agencies who rely on us for support and assistance to figure out what next steps in terms of public policy should be in a way that is driven by data. And so part of it is just the logistics of the public policy research that needs to be done, the fact that the commissions are now working in committees to try to achieve more focused outcomes driven by specific interests like education, policing, health, and so forth. And also the fact that the commissions, we've basically hit a wall in terms of the amount of support that Lucy and Nancy can deliver for us. And we feel that there's so much to do. We're volunteers. We're full of energy and excitement and drive to continue contributing the work that we want to do to the state of Oregon. And all we need is a little bit of staff support to help us leverage all that volunteer activity to extract the benefit from it for the taxpayers of Oregon. And we feel that when you look at the amount of volunteer energy and time and work that's coming into the Advocacy Commission's office, it's a good investment to support this additional staffing. So at this point, I feel I should probably stop and see if there are any questions for us, and if not, then you guys can move on to public testimony.
Questions for Ms. Vardavis? Great. And I apologize, folks, it's not about you, but there are days when people wander in and out of committee meetings like nobody's business. It depends on who's in the building and what people.
I hope it was nothing I said.
It was nothing you said, and it was nothing about the subject matter. It's just that you can never predict. Some days we have the entire committee here for the entire time, and some days there are two of us for the entire time. So it just varies. Thank you. Nothing else from Ms. Vardavis? Ms. Baker, are you good at this point? For now,
I believe I am perfect. And
you are perfect.
Travis Miller, you and me, right? Or is it just you?
Just
okay,
him.
Just Travis Miller.
Okay, but I do want to say in closing, I think the commissions have come an enormous distance in two very short years, and Ms. Baker, Ms. Kramer, and the four commission chairs deserve an enormous amount of credit for the hard work that has gone into creating some really, really viable programs and some excellent research projects that are adding significantly to discussion about how to make Oregon a place where every Oregonian can reach his or her maximum potential, and I really appreciate that. And you're doing it on a shoestring, and that's darned impressive. I really appreciate it. It's really important work that you're doing, and I can't thank you all enough. And for the other commission members, I'd be grateful if those of you who are the chairs would take our thanks to your other volunteers for their service to our state. And their hard work. So, and to the interns as well. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Mr. Miller.
Chair, for the record. My name is Travis Miller. I'm with the Chief Financial Office, and I'm here to present the 2015-17 Governor's Budget for the Oregon Advocacy Commission. I think much of this has been covered in terms of the policy and funding issues. Really, we're looking at increased workload, a lot of this being driven by the increased engagement, increased collaboration, and development of committee structures to really drive some of this policy work forward. Also, the equity-focused legislation that is emerging, not to mention unmet outreach needs. In terms of the equity effects of law and policy, areas where they've engaged, I think that's been adequately covered. There are countless examples. And in terms of the 10-year plan, although this doesn't necessarily fit within a specific outcome area, it really cuts across all of them, bringing that equity lens. And they've spoken so eloquently to that. In terms of the budget proposal, I want to preface this by saying, although in percentage terms it is a substantial increase, the relative investment is modest. We're essentially taking 2 to 5 FTE, and each of those additional staff are in specific response to the identified needs of the commission. And really, this is a budget ask 2 years in the making. So I just want to say that they've done their homework. I've worked with them closely. I've worked with HR, and it's been a pleasure throughout.
Great. So, questions for Mr. Miller? Keep going. Sorry, didn't realize you had that. That was your last slide.
In terms of those specific POPs, we have the reclassification, and this is really focused on interagency collaboration. Some kind of the logistical support that was spoken to, the increased policy research and advocacy. This is for the operations and policy analyst 3, bringing some technical policy analytic support, also being able to leverage those partnerships more effectively. Finally, the policy committee support. I mean, this is basic logistical staffing, just to kind of keep up with the number of meetings that they're having. And lastly, the focus community partner engagement, that's the public affairs specialist, reaching out to communities who are currently not being served. That's it.
Thank you. Questions now for Mr. Miller? Excellent. All right.
Anything else,
Ms. Baker, before we move on to public testimony, which turns out to be fewer people than I realized because all 4 of your commission chairs signed up as public testimony?
No, nothing further. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Then I will ask the 2 of you to stand down, and I will invite Trish Garner and Midge Purcell and Kendall Clausen to come up, please. Oh, Midge left. I apologize. Please. No, come Trish and Kendall. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Trish Garner. I'm here on behalf of the American Association of University Women of Oregon. I will be exceedingly brief. I think you've heard of these agencies' commitment to equality with among all of Oregon citizens. You've also heard of the importance that is placed on data, research, developing policies. I think that data aspect is critical. But what I'm here to talk about is community collaboration. Not only is there collaboration within each of the commissions and collaboration among the coalitions, the commissions, but there's also collaboration with all sorts of members of the Oregonian community. And it's that kind of walking the walk and not just talking the talk that demonstrates that there really can be, as I guess Mr. Moreno had said, a recognition of the true interdependence of all Oregonian citizens. So it's a community collaboration aspect I want to emphasize, and I thank you so much for the opportunity of addressing you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Garner? Ms. Clausen.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, it's wonderful to be here, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kendall Clausen. I am Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Brown. I'm here largely as a fan. We've heard great testimony today from members of the Advocacy Commission team about the great work that they're doing. But I wanted to just come as a person that has the great opportunity to not only help identify the members of this team, but to also work side by side with them as they do amazing work. I think it's important to say that over the course of the last 4 years, we've seen a remarkable change in these commissions. I know that when I first arrived, there was a lot of discussion about what's the point of these things, why do we have them, what do they do, and I think that we were slightly lax in the way in which we even identified good candidates for these commissions. I think we spent more of our time trying to check off boxes to make sure that people represented the ethnic attributes that were required for these commissions, but we weren't spending very much time identifying the good qualities, the skill sets, the kinds of things that are required to not only be great ambassadors for the governor's office, for the legislature, for the citizens of Oregon, but to also to create and drive policy that affects the lives of significant populations throughout our state. So over the last 4 years, they've evolved into a group of four organizations who are led by incredibly talented people, lawyers, business owners, community leaders, nonprofit managers, people who have skills that are required to do this kind of systemic change. So this isn't just about a group of people who are coming together every month to just talk about issues and advocate for things. They're literally changing people's lives. So I feel like hearing this request, I'm first of all grateful that you have a willingness to do this, but to also consider the way in which this group of people will have a role in ensuring that Oregonians who aren't always represented at leadership tables have a voice here within this body and with the partners that are related to it. So I just wanted to put in a good word for them to in essence, as much as my co-signature of anyone's work means anything, that I have worked up close and personal with Lucy and with Nancy. I continue to be amazed at the amount of work that's generated by this group of people, but I think that we can be proud to say that Oregon is really leading the charge in advocating for a group of people who can work on a shoestring, but I think we'll do amazing things if given the resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clausen. Questions for Ms. Clausen? Okay. Anything else we need to be thinking about this particular bill?
I think we're good. Travis covered the policy option packages, and they're also in the LFO presentation materials if you wanted to take a look at those POPs a little bit more and give those some more thought.
Great. Thank you. I heard a rumor that Representative Vega Peterson might be coming, is coming, is not coming. Great. Thank you very much. I didn't want to adjourn if she was on her way, hustling down here. We all know how it is, how hard it is sometimes for people to be in multiple places at once. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5001. Is there any other business before the committee today? If not, we are adjourned. I would remind the committee that we do not meet tomorrow or Monday. So you have an extra hour and a half that you didn't expect. Those of us on full okay, I'm reopening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government really quick, and I'm reopening the public hearing on House Bill 5001. Senator Winters, how nice of you to join us. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jackie Winters, and I represent Senate District 10, and I understand that you're hearing testimony on the advocacy commissions. Just a little background. As the state ombudsman for Governor Victor Attia, I was the staff that began the work to create the Black Commission and the Hispanic Commission under the leadership of Governor Victor Attia. So, and I've seen from the Women's Commission, which preceded that development then, and then since that, there's been the Aging Commission and others. When we created the commission under Governor, it was with knowing that the individuals or the commissions that we're talking about needed a voice in this process. And I think that's true today, just it was in 1979, I think it was when I did it, and 1980. We get so caught up on broader contexts of issues in our society that sometimes we actually forget about the others who often sometimes feel like they do not have a voice in what we do in this building in a larger context. I've had some contacts with some of the members of the commission and talking about some issues that I think that are very prevalent for them. And I don't know whether they've shared some with you today, but, you know, when I look at such issues, when we talk about foster care, for example, foster care and the overrepresentation of minority groups is not acceptable in my view. The other issue that I've asked them to begin looking at, if you take that issue and you begin longitudinally define what's occurring in the NOIA, you'll see the same kind of patterns and what have you, and so I've asked them to begin looking there. This is also true when we look in the Department of Corrections. There is over-representation. In addition, I have shared with some of the individuals who happen to pop in my office periodically to begin looking and asking the question on employment, particularly the high numbers of the unemployment that exists among the minority groups, as well as whether or not we actually are providing the same kind of training opportunities in our vocational institutions. So I support the work that they're doing because I think it's needed and necessary. I think that, you know, to have that voice, to have that input into the deliberations that we're doing in this building is critical and important. So they kind of collared me and asked me if I'd come in and speak. I also, you know, we struggle with each session with talking about the revenue for this group, and there was this notion of somehow that if when we began to give them a dollar and then to say you go out and raise your money. What we fail to understand is that normally the groups don't have the kind of resources, as if we're talking about some of those who are already up there in the number one percentile. That is not true of the individuals that we're talking about. You know, actually, you know, they're probably struggling more with the poverty conditions and what have you than any other group that we know. So with that, you know, I would ask that you actually be very, very thorough in your deliberations and make certain that you give them the adequate funding that they need to carry out their responsibility.
Thank you so much, Senator.
Any questions?
Can I remind you that I chose? It's a pleasure having you in front of our committee, Senator Winters. Thank you for taking the time. And I will point out that Ms. Baker did a great job of pointing out the cost effectiveness by pointing out that the commissions do their work on a total of 16 cents per biennium per person that they represent in this state, which is a pretty trivial sum of money in my book. And that's what I call cost-effective use of taxpayer dollars and warrants some serious consideration of the POPs that they've put forward to us to increase their staff. I'm really looking forward to working with them. They've done some remarkable work. We had a lot of compliments for the progress that they've made over the past 2 years prior to coming in, and I'm glad you're here with us today.
And so, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. I think we also have to recognize and understand Oregon is becoming a lot more diversified than it was when I created the commissions, helped to create the commissions in 1979. And it's no longer where we talk about diversity only in the metropolitan Portland area. It is throughout our state now, and I think we have to recognize that, and we have to be open to the voices of others. I think we learn a lot from each other, diversity is good and healthy, whether we're talking about in our educational systems, whether we're talking about language barriers, or whether we're talking about the understanding of the different cultures. So I just encourage you to look at what is needed to continue to make this one of the greatest states in the United States. So with that, thank you for allowing me to add my 2 cents worth.
We're delighted to have you. Okay. Now we're done? Now we're done? We're delighted to have you. Okay.